and making a wise, snap decision.
Give me a call.
Will do,
Herschel assured him, although he wondered how much longer he would be able to stay out. Weekends were historically Roy's turf, but he hadn't been lobbying for them nearly as hard since his bout with Chad. In fact, Roy hadn't been doing much of anything besides working on the training Mary had given him. It was beginning to concern Herschel a bit, but for the moment, he was grateful to have been handed the chance for a sense of normalcy, regardless of how fleeting it might turn out to be. Alice emerged a few moments after Alex departed, taking a position at the front of the room and gesturing for the others to sit down around her. She made no comment on Alex leaving, taking it on faith that they had ushered him out the door in a properly diplomatic fashion. Interestingly enough, it never occurred to her that their method had been forewarning him so he could escape to freedom.
"Now then, I want to talk to you all about Halloween,"
Alice began once everyone had awkwardly settled in.
"Mary and I were looking at some costume options today, and it occurred to me that there aren't many celebration options for people in our position."
"Wait, the two of you went shopping? When did I miss that turn in the road?"
Nick interrupted.
"Anyway," Alice continued, "my point is that we aren't old enough to drink at the bars, and it's not like the school has many fun activities. I thought we should talk about some possible options."
Well, I hate to say it, but I think my plans for Halloween are already set," Herschel said. "Roy has been looking forward to that for months, and it's really always been his favorite holiday."
"That seems like something of an odd choice," Vince commented.
"He gets to walk around in a costume lacking a shirt and hit on women dressed in far more appealing clothing than they would normally wear, all while hopping from bar to bar finding an endless supply of co-eds," Herschel explained.
"That does make a lot more sense," Nick agreed.
"Yeah," Vince said, distracted. The mention of Roy in a bar had reminded him of something he'd been curious about the night they had gone to Whiskey Shallows.
"Hey, Herschel, how come Roy can drink out in public like that?
He's the same age as you, so shouldn't that be illegal?"
"Oh, Roy has a fake ID. Given how mature he looks, no one ever really questions it when he goes out,"
Herschel explained.
"Ahem,"
Alice said, clearing her throat purposefully.
"If we're quite done discussing yet another way that Roy is violating rules, perhaps we can move back to my original point and discuss what we might want to do for Halloween?"
"I've got a better question," Nick said. "Why are you assuming we'll all want to do something together? I mean, we've all done our own thing for the past few weeks, and that's been working out pretty well. How about we all just do whatever we want for Halloween?"
There was a beat of silence as Alice used every drop of self-control she had to keep from blushing. She'd gotten so wrapped up in shopping with Mary today, she had managed to forget that the rest of her dorm mates were her cohabitants, not really her friends. With a swift and disproportionate sense of embarrassment, she imagined how silly she must seem, suddenly trying to rally everyone together out of the blue. Urgently, she grasped for anything she could say to gracefully exit the conversation and retreat to her room, where she could forget all about this little foray in social expansion.
"We've all been doing our own thing because we were getting acclimated to the campus and the program. That doesn't mean we shouldn't consider each other friends and ignore our sense of unity. We're the only people on this entire campus that know what kind of horror it is to have powers and not be able to control them. We all lived through that. We all dealt with that. And right now, we're all doing our best to make sure no one else ever knows about that part of our past. If that doesn't make us at least connected enough to consult together on holiday plans, then I don't think we'll be bonded to anyone. Ever,"
Mary said sternly. Nick stared across at her, and Mary matched his gaze. many people would have been subtly intimidated by not being able to see Nick's eyes, but for Mary, it was no concern at all. She didn't need to look into his eyes to see into his head, and Nick knew it.
"Okay, okay," Nick said with a shrug. "It was just a question. So, Alice, I assume you had some ideas for what we could do?"
Oh, yes,
Alice said, recovering quickly. Outwardly, she went through the few options she'd compiled thus far, gauging everyone's reactions to the possible celebrations. Inwardly, though, she was dealing with the sense of shock and overwhelming gratitude she felt for Mary. In all of her life, Alice couldn't think of one time anyone else had stood up for her like that. It was a very novel, very nice sensation. And somewhere, in the deepest parts of her mind, the mask of friendship she had worn toward the tiny telepath became just a few degrees closer to reality. 40.
"You have got to be kidding me! More books? Where are you even finding these things?"
Nick wailed as Alice walked into the common room with a pile of books bundled in her arms.
"Yeah, that's the appropriate reaction here. Bitch about me finding more resources. Don't even pause for a minute to consider helping the lady in need," Alice snapped.
"I'm a proponent of gender equality," Nick shot back.
The duo was meeting to work on their group project yet again, though in this case, work might have been a somewhat loose definition. It more often consisted of Nick finding ways to occupy himself outside of the subject at hand, and Alice berating him for it as her method of research avoidance. Neither appeared particularly adept at knuckling down for hard work, but as the due date drew closer, Alice found her stress level rising in proportion, and she was determined they make headway with what time they had left.
"Such a gentleman,"
Alice mumbled as she set the books down and took her seat. She tried to maintain her implacably polite demeanor for the first week or so, but something about Nick seemed to render her usual defense inaccessible.
"Hey, you're the one that campaigned for it. I'm just respecting your wishes."
"If you're granting wishes, I'd love for you to pick up a damn book and help me with this. Our presentation is in 2 weeks,"
Alice said through gritted teeth.
"Yeah, but Halloween is in a week and a half, so shouldn't we really be focusing more on what we're going to do costume-wise?"
Nick replied. Alice took a deep breath.
"I've already gotten mine prepared, because unlike you, I plan ahead of time. By that same token, I'd also like to plan ahead for what we're going to say when standing in front of the entire freshman class, presenting the life of a superhero we know next to nothing about."
"What's to know? I mean, the guy is pretty infamous as is. He was part of the world's most respected team of heroes. Then one day, out of the blue, he goes rogue, kills his partner, and gets taken down by the rest of his team. It's one of the most famous stories of any hero. Do you really think we're going to shed any new light or insight into one of the most speculated on events of the past century?" Nick asked.
"I think we damn sure better try," Alice responded. "We picked this topic. We told Dean Blaine this was the guy we wanted. If we go in there with this report half-assed, it reflects horribly on us. Besides, he can't be all that infamous. I've never heard of him."
"Tell me you're joking," Nick said. "You've never heard of Globe the Traitor? He's like the favorite cautionary tale of everyone in the super community. Don't grow too full of yourself or you'll end up like Globe. Your parents never told you about him?"
"I was raised with other educational goals. Besides, since it was never even considered that I might one day gain control and become a super, such cautionary tales would hardly have been necessary. What happened with him, anyway?"
Alice asked.
"I thought you'd been researching him."
"I have," she said defensively. "I simply started with his early life, which was oddly difficult to find information on. I haven't gotten to him joining a team of heroes yet, let alone betraying them.
I can try to fill you in, Nick said. You have to understand that not a whole lot is really known about the details, though. It was a pretty big PR mess for the super community, and I think a lot of the records were sealed and information was hidden away.
That might explain why I'm having such trouble finding anything about his early life.
True point, Nick agreed. Anyway, from what I know, Globe was part of a team of heroes around 15 years ago, give or take a few. They were really powerful. I mean, out of the five members, two were considered so strong that it was thought they might grow into Armageddon class.
Those are the ones who could actually destroy the world if left unchecked, correct?
Bingo, Nick confirmed. Globe was one of those two, and the story is that he got a little too full of himself. He felt like he was doing all of the work and carrying his team. Those feelings snowballed over time, and eventually, he decided he didn't need them anymore.
So he quit the team,
Alice surmised. That's one way to put it. Another would be to say that he murdered Intra, one of his teammates, and tried to kill the other three as well before they were eventually able to kill him instead. It was one hell of a resignation letter.
That's awful, Alice gasped. He turned on his own team?
Even worse, Intra was apparently his best friend. The two of them were partners before they joined up with the other three members, Nick added.
It seems odd, though, Alice remarked. I mean, I guess I can see growing unhappy with a team, but why not just leave? Why end your relationship in murder?
Hence why I said this is one of the most speculated on events in modern history. It doesn't really make sense. There must have been some other motivation going on behind the scenes. We don't know what they were, though, so the whole thing just ends up being one big head-scratching mystery, Nick said. Alice said, the wheels turning in her head.
Maybe we can take an angle of looking at it from the point of view of the rest of the team. My father is well connected. It's possible he could pull some strings and line up a few interviews for it.
He'd have to be really well connected.
Just tell me the name of the other team members,
Alice said, a twitch too quickly to pass over Nick's comment nonchalantly. We only have their code names, of course, Nick said. Even in death, the identity of a hero is protected. If memory serves, though, the other team members were Intra, the one who was killed, as well as Black Hole and Shimmerpath. There was one more, too.
We know of two. Is the last one terribly important? Alice asked.
Couldn't hurt, Nick replied. Let me think a second. He had something to do with changing the composition of things. Alice felt her stomach take a very abrupt and deliberate trip in the southern direction.
You know, Nick, I think we're fine with just these two.
The Alchemist, Nick declared triumphantly. The fifth member was a man by the name of the Alchemist. Anyway, after Globe went nuts, the team was disbanded, and everyone left alive disappeared from the world of heroes. Think your dad would be able to find them?
I'm unfortunately certain of it,
Alice said through gritted teeth.
My father is Charles Adair, but back in his hero days, he went by the code name The Alchemist.
Oh, Nick said, as understanding seemed to dawn on him. Awkward.
41. Still no answer.
Alice all but swore as she paced the room, snapping her cell phone shut.
Ain't that always the way? Parents are always calling when you're busy, but the minute you actually need to talk, they're nowhere to be found, Nick commented from his sprawled-out position on the couch.
Oh, this is just so... so him,
Alice spat out, dropping into a chair with a huff.
In all fairness to your dad, it's not like he knows you're trying to reach him this hard, Nick said.
Not that. I mean, well, yes, him being busy and unavailable is classic, too, but I meant the thing with his old teammate. That is just so daddy,
Alice grumbled.
He makes a habit of helping to kill murderous teammates, huh?
Don't be a jackass,
Alice snapped.
It's so like him to have this huge part of his life and tell me nothing about it. I mean, I can sort of understand why he might not want to tell me about what happened with Globe. I'm sure that was really traumatic. But I never even knew he belonged to a team. I thought he just got his certification and did a little hero work to help his career. Now it turns out there's yet another part of his life he didn't bother to share with me. The funniest part about this is that as much as I want to feel mad, I can't. I can't, because I don't even feel surprised by it anymore.
Alice let out a long, slow breath, deflating as it exited her lungs.
I actually sort of know what you mean, Nick ventured cautiously. Miss Pipps isn't really big on sharing either.
I thought your last name was Campbell,
Alice asked.
It is, Nick confirmed. It was my parents' last name. The woman who raised me is named Miss Pipps, though.
Oh,
Alice said simply, grabbing the implication immediately.
Yeah, Nick said, glossing onward. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Miss Pipps, and she loves me. A guy couldn't ask for a better godmother. She's just not the type that gushes anything. Feelings, personal history, dreams. Really, any of that crap is kept close to the vest. You know, kind of like your dad. Or that's how it seems, at least.
It seems right, Alice agreed. He's a better dad when he's around, but you don't build a multi-billion-dollar lifestyle by having lots of free time to hang out with your defective daughter.
Defective?
Not anymore, I guess. Just still sort of think of myself that way. From ages 3 to 18, I was damaged goods. That sort of mindset takes a little time to fade,
Alice admitted.
It really does, Nick concurred. And what about your mom? Is she around more?
I never actually met my mom,
Alice said softly.
She passed away giving birth to me.
I'm sorry, Nick said reflexively.
It's okay. It was a long time ago. Besides, I never met her, so it's hard to miss her,
Alice reassured him. Nick pulled himself to a more upright sitting position on the couch and looked across at Alice.
You're a terrible liar, he said.
I beg your pardon?
Alice wasn't able to keep the surprise off of her face.
My parents died in a car accident when I was a few months old. I might have met them, but I have no memory of them at all. I've spent my entire life being raised by Miss Pipps without even knowing my birth parents. I know too well how easy it is to miss someone you've never met, Nick said.
Alice didn't have a response for that, so instead, she fiddled with her phone.
Going to try your dad again?
Doesn't seem like much point to it,
Alice replied.
I guess we might as well go back to me nagging and you slacking off.
Do we have to? I thought we were bonding there for a moment,
Nick whined.
We were, which is why I'm nipping it in the bud,
Alice countered. She picked up one of her books and tossed another at Nick. To her credit, she didn't aim too directly for his head, which might have been taken as a sign of fondness.
Ouch!
Nick yelped. Then again, maybe not. How did I never realize you two were sweet mates? Vince asked as he plugged in the movie and rejoined Sasha and Jill on their couch.
I do spend a lot of time downstairs training,
Jill said, handing a bowl of popcorn to Sasha so it was accessible to everyone on the couch. Still seems odd. Then again, I still don't know who shares a room with you, so I guess I can't be that surprised, Vince noted.
My roommate is a girl named Amber. She has an older boyfriend who lives off campus, so she spends most of her free time with him, Jill answered. It's nice, actually. A bit like having a single room.
Wait, so the other girl, Amber, is she like us?
Of course, Vince. They almost always room supers together, Jill giggled. Vince had been surprised by her bubbly nature when they'd actually gotten to talk after her and Sasha's fight. She'd been so cold and hard when in combat. But then again, the same could be said for Sasha. More than anything, he was glad the two girls had been able to shake hands and continue on with their apparent friendship after the bout had been decided. He wondered how many other supers were able to maintain such amiable relationships after challenges. His suspicion was very few.
"Okay, it's set up," Will called from behind the television. "Sweet," Sasha said. "And you're sure this won't fry our TV, right?"
93% sure, Will answered, as he emerged from the tangled depths of the mythical land known as Behind the TV.
"That still seems like a pretty significant margin of error," Sasha said.
"Relax. If my brother designed it, it won't blow anything up. Unless it's supposed to blow something up. Anyway, the point is, even if it doesn't work, it won't be destructive. He's religious about using safeguards," Jill assured Sasha.
"What do you mean, even if it doesn't work?" Will asked as he plunked down in a chair next to the couch.
"Nobody bats a thousand, little brother."
"We're twins," Will pointed out.
"Yes, but I'm older by 2 minutes," Jill replied, sticking out her tongue.
"Stupid sister, rushing out the birth canal," Will grumbled. "Anyway, what cinematic masterpiece are we using to test my new device?"
"Flesh Reaper 4, Hell's Reaping," Vince told him. There was a beat of silence before Will's strangled voice managed to eke out one lone word.
"Really?
Hey, it's like a week and a half before Halloween. The video store was pretty heavily favoring the horror section. I did the best I could," Vince defended.
"You understand what I built, right? It's a three-dimensional immersion device. We're not just talking about pictures standing off the screen. We're talking about being in the center of the film. We're talking about seeing the landscape of it in every direction, of sitting on this couch underwater, or in space, or on Mount Fuji. We're going to be utterly, visually submerged in this world, and the world you chose for that is Flesh Reaper 3?
Will asked.
"Flesh Reaper 4, Vince corrected him. "Besides, it'll be fun to have something a little scary. All I'm doing for the real Halloween is going to some party that Alice found."
"That doesn't sound so bad," Jill said.
"Maybe not. I don't know. I've never been to one of these before. Apparently it's hosted by one of the local frats, but everyone is welcome. You just have to be in costume and pay the $5 entry charge," Vince said with a shrug.
"Are you going?" Jill asked Sasha.
"Already working on my costume," Sasha said with a naughty smirk.
"You two are more than welcome," Vince said. "Again, I don't know if it will be worth the $5, but if you've got nothing else to do, it might be fun."
"We will certainly keep that in mind," Will said. "At any rate, I think it's time to put my new invention through a test drive."
"Woo!"
Sasha yelled.
"Do it," Vince joined in.
"Go, bro,"
Jill said, less enthusiastically.
"Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you an entirely new way to watch movies, a way that is closer to living them than merely observing the pictures pass before your eyes,"
Will said, firing up the remote.
"Years from now, when everyone is using these devices, tonight will be a historic night. The night when the first lucky viewers were given the privilege of experiencing a new level of glory in the film Flesh Reaper."
Will's steam died off noticeably when he got to the movie title.
"Flesh Reaper 4, Vince corrected. 42. A week and change later found the male Melbrook residents, along with a few additions, gathering in the common room for one last wardrobe check before venturing off into the haunted night.
"Okay, pilgrims. Y'all about ready to get on the trail?"
The questions came from a cowboy standing toward the center of the room. He wore faded jeans, a white linen shirt, and a brown duster, along with a matching cowboy hat. Slung low across his waist was a pair of gun belts with a plastic six-shooter tucked into each side. He had a 3-day scruff on his face and a casual posture, adding a sense of realism to the costume. The whole thing was marred, though, by the presence of a pair of black sunglasses across his eyes. "Seriously, Nick?" Vince said, adjusting his chainmail. Vince was dressed as a knight, complete with plastic sword, plastic chainmail, and a plastic helmet, all spray-painted gray to look like metal. The effect was not altogether successful. "If you're going to all the trouble of using an accent, would it be so bad to take off the glasses?" "Yes," Nick said quickly. "Plus they add to the effect." "Pardner?"
"It does add a touch of dashing," Will commented from his seat on the couch.
Will was wearing a tailored black tuxedo, complemented with an array of high-tech gadgets tucked away within its folds and pockets for his costume as a spy.
"I don't think anyone will notice," Roy tossed in, flexing his pecs.
Roy was dressed as what one could only assume was either some sort of ancient gladiator or a male escort that catered to a very specific fetish. He wore little more than an expanded loincloth and sandals, leaving the rest of his muscled body intentionally exposed. At present, he was oiling up his chest before moving on to his arms. Vince bit back a remark that wanted to snake out. Roy was still an annoying cockbag, but he had toned it down tremendously since his fight with Chad. They rarely saw him anymore. He was almost always training when he was in control of the body. When he was around, though, he seemed to make a genuine effort not to verbally abuse those around him directly. Indirectly, it still seemed a free-for-all, but progress was progress.
"What's taking the girls so long?" Alex asked.
He was standing near the hallway, wearing a white tunic with black pants underneath a brown robe. A familiar tubular metal device was fastened to his hip, and anyone who wasn't utterly ignorant of classic sci-fi cinema was able to recognize his costume in a heartbeat.
"Is that a real question?" Roy asked. "I mean, you have met women at some point in your life, right?"
"I'm sure they just want everything to look perfect," Vince cut in. "I know Sasha spent a lot of time on her costume, and I'm sure the others did as well."
"That we did,"
Mary said, as the door to the girls' side opened, and the women began trickling out from their lounge. Mary was dressed as a gypsy, wearing long, flowing garments, a scarf, and rings of coins that jingled when she walked. After her was Alice, who sported a nun's habit and dress, though it fit her form in ways the sisterhood would surely not have approved of, given that there was a slit up the side and the bottom of it was not even near her knees.
"Wow, someone jumped whole hog onto the slutty train,"
Nick observed when Alice came into his field of vision. Alice merely gave a shrug.
"It is Halloween, after all."
"True. Why a nun, though, pardner?" Nick asked.
"It's kind of an inside joke. Think about it for a while,"
Alice replied.
"I sincerely hope my sister showed a touch more prudence in selecting her ensemble," Will commented. "Not that it's any of your business, little brother, but I think I walked a nice line,"
Jill said as she emerged through the door. Jill was decked out in what appeared to be a torn orange prisoner's jumpsuit. While select parts of it were shredded or removed to create an aesthetical appeal given Jill's slender frame, it was definitely more conservative than Alice's, while not being quite as covering as Mary's. Sasha came out last, wearing a jumpsuit as well. Hers was in one piece, and unlike Jill's, it was definitely sewn to fit her figure. In fact, a phrase like skin tight would not have found itself out of place in describing her ensemble. It was decorated with checkered flags and logos of various products. Aside from that, her hair was flared out as though the wind had been blowing through it, and she sported a pair of aviator sunglasses across her face.
"Hey, the glasses thing is sort of my shtick," Nick said.
"And when you make them look this good, you can have that shtick back," Sasha rebutted.
"Touché," Nick said, and then hastily added, "Partner."
"That's not getting old," Vince sighed, then turned his attention to Sasha. "You look fantastic."
"Thanks. I thought fast girl, race car driver, there's something of a connection there," she said. "Plus I had it down to two options, and this was the one I could do and be sexy."
"What was the other?" Vince asked.
"I was going to wear a football helmet, drag along a bunch of broken things, and tell everyone I was a powered," Sasha said, all but cackling at her own humor.
The others joined in, though not quite so enthusiastically, and it should be noted that Alex didn't laugh at all. As for the Melbrook residents, well, they were working very hard to fit in. Let us say that in their defense and leave it there.
"Yeah, that would have been a good one," Alice lied. "Anyway, let's get going. How are we doing cars?"
The group then began the sizable chore that is transporting many people in limited vehicles to the same location. It was solved in relatively short order, and the freshmen departed to the raucous Halloween party. Their spirits were high, but five of them were a bit lower than they had been. On a day of costumes and pretend, they'd been reminded that their outfits were a touch redundant, because they were already lying to everyone about who they really were. 43. The warehouse that the fraternity had rented was, well, just that. It was a warehouse in the industrial district of Lander that someone had clearly deemed unfit for use, but that someone else, likely someone well compensated, deemed more than adequate to house hundreds of young, bright minds and extensive musical equipment. Still, none of the partygoers paid much attention to lack of structural integrity. Instead, they lined up outside, allowing local police to check their IDs and mark their hands appropriately, then depositing $5 with the doorman and entering the bass-thumping building, already nearly crushed with bodies. Once inside, the aesthetics were slightly better, in the same sense that being chased by a cheetah is slightly better than being chased by a bear, because at least you won't have to run for long from the cheetah. The walls were multicolored tones of gray and faded white that might as well have been gray, and the concrete floors provided poor acoustical absorption from the massive sound system set up near the rear of the building. Overpriced drink and food carts littered the walls, with a few selling alcoholic beverages to those with unmarked hands, as well as those with marked hands who were willing to pay double under the table. Near these concession areas stood a smattering of tables and chairs, though most of the warehouse was dedicated to room for the young ones to dance and mingle. It was a scene that anyone with culture and sense would dub a new level of hell.
"This place is awesome!"
Vince cried out, the others nodding in agreement as they holed up at one of the few open tables and took a moment to collect their bearings.
"I can't believe they can finance this whole party with just $5 per person. That's really nice of them."
"I'd say less nice, more intelligent," Will corrected.
"How so?" Vince asked.
In response, Will pointed to an area of the warehouse where a small section of couches had been set up and roped off. Sitting on these plush seats were a collection of males in costume, as well as a rotating selection of females entering and leaving.
"This is the best place to go for all of us underage students, and they know it. So now they've got access to hundreds of young girls away from home for the first time and looking to spread their wings of experimentation. On top of that, they're in positions of power in this small one-building kingdom, able to expel people at will. It's a sweet setup when you think about it,"
Will explained.
"That seems a bit underhanded when you point it out," Vince said.
"War is hell, and mating is the greatest war any man will ever fight," Will shot back.
"Besides, what do you care who gets first crack at the girls with self-esteem and daddy issues? You've got your own dysfunctional lady right here,"
Sasha jumped in, putting her hand on Vince's knee and squeezing gently.
"That's great for you two, but some of us need to work a room to know who we're taking home tonight,"
Roy said, rising from the table and locating the nearest vendor with alcohol. It might have been Vince's imagination, but he could have sworn Roy shot Mary a questioning look before setting out on his own. Even stranger, though, was that he was almost positive she responded to his gaze with a small, affirmative nod. He shook it off as a mere misinterpretation as Roy began weaving his way through the crowd, not unsurprisingly drawing looks of admiration from many of the female attendees.
"I hate to say it, but he has a point," Alex said. "This seems like a great opportunity to meet some new girls. Hell, that's part of why I came. I just wish Herschel were here, too."
"Trust me, he wouldn't be much help in that department," Nick told him. "Besides, I'll come wing for you. Chicks totally dig the shades."
"Thanks," Alex said sincerely. "I've had a little trouble getting into my groove up here. It's harder to snag a date than it was in high school."
"You just gotta get confident, buddy," Nick assured. "That's all any lady wants."
"You're probably right,"
Alex agreed, rising to his feet with Nick following suit.
"I guess the biggest difference is I never had to try before. I mean, back then, everyone knew about my extraordinary talents, so most of the girls were always hitting on me."
"Being regular sucks," Nick agreed, throwing an arm around Alex's shoulders and dragging him off into the crowd. "Let's try my extraordinary talent. I call it lying."
"What about you guys?"
Vince asked the remainder of the table once Nick and Alex had departed.
"I have a girlfriend back home," Will told him. "And my understanding of college courtship says it is traditional for the women to wait for a man to make the first move on them." "Shitty, but true," Jill confirmed. "So you two are just stuck with us." "Oh, assballs," Sasha swore.
"Geez, did you want to be alone that bad?"
Alice asked.
Not that. Sorry," Sasha said. "I just realized I forgot my chapstick in Alice's car."
"I'll go get it," Vince volunteered. "Alice, you want to come with, or just have me use the keys?"
In response, Alice pulled out her keys and slid them across the table with a light jingling sound.
"I understand the need for protected lips, but my ass is settled, and getting up in this outfit is an ordeal just to keep myself covered."
"Thanks, Alice,"
Sasha said, snagging the keys and handing them to Vince.
"And thank you, my big, strong knight."
Vince accepted the keys and her praise with a sheepish grin, then got up and began fighting his way against the current to exit the building. It took some doing, but he finally reached the other side of the entrance, confirmed with the doorman he would just be exiting to retrieve something from the car, and made his way into the parking lot. The October air was surprisingly refreshing after the small amount of time he'd spent sweltering inside the warehouse. He made his way down the street, savoring the sweet crispness, and realizing how much he missed being outdoors on nights like these. He'd adapted so quickly to living in one place and sleeping indoors all the time. Yet, as his feet slapped against the pavement, a small wave of nostalgia crashed against him. Maybe he would see what sort of camping options Lander had nearby. He was sure at least a few of his friends would be interested in spending a night among the trees. If Vince had been a bit more focused on the task at hand, and a bit less lost in his haze of memories and potential plans for the future, it's entirely possible he would have heard the figure sneaking up behind him in time to react. That was not the case, however. And so, as Vince rounded the side street to the parking lot where Alice's car was located, he felt a blast of freezing energy smash against his lower back, frosting over his legs and sticking him in place. The next blast hit his upper back, locking his arms and reinforcing the restriction on his torso.
"You'd think a guy like you would learn to watch his back," said Michael's all-too-familiar-by-this-point voice.
"Sorry," Vince chattered through his rapidly cooling jaw. I don't think like a coward.
"I've gotten really sick of that mouth of yours, sucker punch," Michael sneered as he circled around to Vince's front.
Vince snorted a laugh out through the cold, and Michael's eyes narrowed.
"What's so funny?"
"Irony," Vince answered, slowly letting his reserve of heat pour out all over his body, melting the ice on contact with his skin.
"I'm glad you got a good chuckle," Michael taunted. "See, I figured something out about you. You might be a good fighter, but you're weak as shit. All you had was one punch when we fought. Even if you've got a little fire in you tonight, I'm betting if I wrap you in ice 10 inches thick, you won't be able to burn your way out of it."
"You bet wrong,"
Vince lied, trying valiantly to keep the rush of fear off of his face.
"Could be," Michael agreed. "Let's find out."
44. Most 18-year-old men would feel at least a bit self-conscious to be 80% uncovered and coated in oil at a crowded, costumed social event. Then again, Roy Daniels had never been especially similar to other people his age. Perhaps that was why, as he took a tour around the dance floor, sipping on a beer, he savored all the looks and glances people were throwing his way. At no point did the idea that anyone found his costume, or the large amount of well-muscled body that it exposed, to be in any way unattractive, cross his mind. Roy's ego had undoubtedly taken a hit at his loss to Chad some weeks earlier, but that was only the part of his esteem tethered to fighting. When it came to his looks, that mountain of security was still utterly unmoved. Roy pulled up to a new vendor in order to refresh his beer supply. He'd done a few tours of the room now, and had selected the 5 women that he felt were at the top of the attractiveness scale. Roy had shown patience, and it had paid off, because 3 of those women had arrived after he had. It was always important to make sure you waited to find the best, because if something better came along and you were already mid-game, it was a huge pain in the ass to start over. Roy was willing to do a fair few things for new tail, but working harder than he absolutely had to was not one of those things.
"I totally thought that line would work," Nick's familiar voice complained as he and Alex joined in the line behind Roy to purchase drinks.
"Traditionally, nice shoes wanna fuck is used as a joke, not a real line," Alex explained to him.
Still, I felt the slap was a bit much, Nick added, rubbing his cheek.
I take it you girls... that you're striking out with the girls?
Roy asked, with a half-turn, catching himself mid-sentence with the belittling terminology he was accustomed to using. Mary had left no wiggle room for that one. It was fully off-limits.
"Striking out is such vulgar terminology," Nick replied. "It implies that we're playing a game, which would make these women prizes to be won. I think we can all agree they're intelligent, independent beings who deserve to be held in higher esteem than that."
"You do realize there aren't any girls in earshot, don't you?"
Roy asked.
"Oh. Yeah, them hoes be shutting us down."
Nick shrugged.
"Word,"
Alec seconded.
"I can't say I'm surprised. Nick, you're wearing sunglasses at night in a party. And Alex is dressed up like someone from a sci-fi movie,"
Roy pointed out.
"Chicks dig the shades," Nick shot back.
"That's why you're standing in line with another guy right now?"
Roy countered.
"I don't see you doing much better, Romeo,"
Nick said.
"You're waiting in line by yourself."
"I'm choosing my target carefully,"
Roy told him.
"There's a lot of talent here tonight. I want to make sure I'm getting the biggest piece of chicken on the table."
Nick and Alex responded with very questioning, very confused looks.
"It's a southern metaphor,"
Roy explained.
"Dude, you're from Chicago,"
Nick said.
"Herschel is from Chicago. I'm from the Deep South."
"That makes, quite literally, no sense at all," Nick said.
"Word,"
Alex seconded again.
"Look, I don't have to explain myself to you guys. The point is, I'm picking the best girl here to go home with. That's the only reason I'm solo right now,"
Roy said, stepping forward as the boy in front of him finished setting his money on the counter.
"So that's it, huh? You'll just pick the best one, and of course she'll go home with you?"
Alex asked.
"Yep,"
Roy said, as he selected his beer.
"This I've got to see," Nick said.
"Feel free,"
Roy agreed.
"Just keep your distance while the master works. As for me, I've picked my target, so it's go time."
"Looks like I wasn't so wrong after all,"
Michael chuckled. Vince couldn't reply, unfortunately, since Michael had frozen him almost totally solid. The only part of his body still exposed was the top half of his head, allowing him to breathe, and, of course, to stay conscious and suffer. The rest of his body was caked in inches of ice. The only thing keeping him from hypothermia was the slow pulse of heat he was releasing all across his body intermittently. Vince only had a few lighters worth of fire in him, though, and his reserves were running dangerously low.
"You look kind of silly,"
Michael commented as he surveyed his work.
"I think it suits you, though. It's like a living piece of art, a testament to what happens when you take on Michael Clark. I feel like you've learned your lesson tonight, haven't you?"
Vince stared at his bald tormentor, unsure of exactly how Michael was expecting him to convey surrender.
"Oh, right. Froze your jaw there. Okay, I'll make it simple. Just blink twice to show me you understand, and I think we can finally be done with this."
Vince locked eyes with Michael. The smart thing was to blink twice, get free, and come at Michael again on another day. A day when he wasn't totally helpless and fast running out of energy. A day when he had a real chance at taking this cockbag down. It was the most basic strategic decision he could have been presented with. Vince didn't blink. His eyelid didn't even twitch.
That's a shame, Vince. I really thought you and I had come to an understanding. I guess we need to continue the education, though.
Michael sighed. He pulled back his fist and focused his energy.
I have severe doubts that this is a sanctioned match,
said a deep, male voice from behind Michael. Before Michael was able to turn and see who the speaker was, two beams of orange energy had snared him. One wrapped around his forearm, and the other grabbed his torso, yanking him up into the air.
"Who the fuck are you?"
Michael spit, jerking and twisting his arm to get free.
"My friends call me Thomas," the speaker said, stepping into Vince's view. "I have a feeling you won't be counting yourself as one of those, though."
Thomas was a dark-skinned male, one Vince recognized from gym and their ethics class. He was dressed as a Native American, and both of his hands were outstretched, a beam of orange energy emanating from each one.
"I've got him restrained," Thomas called out. "You guys check on his victim."
Vince heard three people approaching behind him. He would have turned to look if he'd possessed a full range of motion. As it was, all he could do was listen.
"He's not a victim," Michael yelled. "We were just having a fight."
"An unsanctioned fight, in the middle of an alleyway where anyone could have seen you using your powers, and where it looks like you're tormenting him after having won a long time ago. Yeah, this seems real legit,"
Thomas said calmly.
"I think he's okay," called out a deep female voice. "Violet's going to weaken the ice so we can pull him out."
"I wouldn't be averse to a little help here,"
Thomas called back.
"He's still struggling, and this guy in the number three rank for nothing."
"I've got to work on the ice, and we'll need Camille as soon as I'm done,"
said a new female voice, presumably Violet.
"That just leaves me,"
said the original female voice. She walked past Vince as she approached Michael. It was a girl he easily recognized from class. Though she was dressed as some sort of Viking woman, the tightly braided, pulled-back hair gave her away as Stella, the girl that always asked questions without raising her hand. She strode right over to where Michael was struggling a foot or so off the ground and punched him in the throat. His twisting and jerking was immediately replaced by rasping and choking for air.
"That was excessive force,"
Thomas chided her.
"No, it was the best solution," Stella argued. "If I'd said to let him down and we'd fought him all honorably, then he would have used his full power, so we would have had to do the same, and it would have caused a lot of property damage as well as creating a damn good chance we'd all be outed as supers. Sometimes the only option is a quick punch to the throat."
"I've almost got him over here," said Violet, still behind Vince. He wasn't sure what she was doing, but he could feel the ice behind him cracking apart and giving way. All at once, a chunk of it fell off, and Vince felt himself tipping backward. Two pairs of arms caught him and laid him down on the pavement. His energy almost completely depleted and his life out of danger, Vince did the only thing he was capable of at that point.
"Thank you,"
Vince mumbled weakly, and then passed out into sweet oblivion. 45. Vince came around a few minutes later, shivering slightly, and pulled himself up off the concrete.
"Whoa there, buddy. I'd go slow if I were you. Camille patched you up, but cold has a way of seeping in on people,"
said the dark-skinned boy dressed as a Native American.
"I'm getting used to it," Vince said. "Sadly."
"I take it you and Baldy have a history?"
"Only in his sad, angry little cue ball of a head," Vince said. "Thanks for saving me, by the way."
"Of course,"
Thomas said.
It was an illegal match, and you were down. There was nothing else to do.
Well, I'm still glad you wandered by. My name is Vince, by the way.
Thomas,
Thomas replied, extending a hand. Vince accepted and shook it.
So I heard, Vince said. Where are the rest of your friends?
Camille went to get some help, and Violet and Stella are escorting Frosty back to campus,
Thomas told him.
He'll be less of an ass after he sleeps off the alcohol. We hope.
Michael was drunk? Vince said in surprise.
My understanding is that most students have a pre-party a bit before these events, especially the underage ones who can't buy anything during. It seems he went a little overboard,
Thomas said.
I guess I feel a little bit better, Vince said.
Also, you should call your friend Camille. I'm going to be fine. I don't need any more help, and I really don't want to cause a fuss.
You sure about that? You took a pretty nasty beating there.
I'm sure, Vince confirmed. Your healer took care of nearly everything except the exhaustion. Right now, all I want to do is catch a bus home and sleep for a day.
Your call, I guess,
Thomas shrugged. That it is, Vince agreed. Thanks again for saving me, though. I can't express how glad I am you guys stopped him.
A person was in need,
Thomas replied.
That's the exact reason we're going through this training anyway, right? Besides, once we report him on Monday, I'm pretty sure you won't have to worry about Michael anymore.
Report him? Vince asked.
Of course. He broke the rules,
Thomas answered. Sure, but I mean, I'm okay and everything. Like I said, I'd rather avoid a fuss, Vince said.
He broke the rules,
Thomas said again.
That means he has to be reported so he can face the consequences.
Yes. Yes, you're right, of course, Vince agreed. By all means, make the report on Monday. If you'll excuse me, though, I really am feeling drained from my ordeal.
Of course. Go home and rest. Are you sure you don't need any more help?
I'm positive, Vince reassured him. But tell your friends thanks as well from me.
Will do,
Thomas agreed.
Mr. Reynolds,
Dean Blaine called as Vince entered Ethics of Heroism on Tuesday.
May I speak with you a moment?
Sure, Vince said awkwardly. He had a pretty good inclination what this was going to be about, and it was something he'd been hoping dearly would slide by unnoticed.
It seems Coach George would like you to go to the gym today, instead of attending my class,
Dean Blaine said, any possible resentment at his class being snubbed hidden artfully in the smile that stretched across his face. Is that okay? Vince asked. I mean, we start presentations today.
You and Mr. Murray are scheduled for Thursday, since, as you know, we weren't able to fit all of them into just one class. I do hope you'll hurry back to watch the others if possible, but if Coach George feels this is important enough to pull you from class, then you should make sure to give him your full attention,
Dean Blaine assured him. No other option coming to mind, Vince waited against the incoming crowd and made his way to the gymnasium. Nick noticed idly that Vince was exiting instead of entering, but he'd been suspecting something was up since Saturday anyway. Vince wasn't the kind of guy to flake out, so when he'd vanished early in the night, only to text Sasha that he'd gotten suddenly ill and had caught a bus home, it was obvious he was lying. Inconvenient, too, since he'd had Alice's keys when he ditched. Fortunately, Sasha was able to dash over and recover them, so the pilgrimage home had been possible. Whatever Vince was dealing with was obviously tethered to what had happened Saturday, but Nick's attention was focused on his task at hand for the day. He and Alice were scheduled to present, and he had a bad feeling he knew exactly the spot they were going in. Sure enough, as the class settled into their seats, Alice's tall frame remained standing, speaking hurriedly to Dean Blaine and gesturing to the mountain of poster board she had dragged along with her. One might think